Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. The English language is usually a pretty useful tool. Most of us don't have too much trouble finding a word to describe what we're talking about. But it's a rapidly changing world in which we live, and ideas often come along that defy easy explanation, like, say, the use of microscopic components to build machines. It's a concept called nanorobotics. This next interview isn't about nanorobotics, though. It's about neologisms, names for things that didn't have names before. Writer Lizzie Skernick has a knack for coming up with them, enough so that her column in the New York Times magazine, called That Should Be a Word, has won fans from around the world. And it spurred a book by the same name, which is just out and which she'll talk about at Boswell Book Company this Saturday afternoon at 3. Lizzie Skernick recently joined Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke via Skype from Jersey City.
Welcome back to Lake Effect. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, too.
Is it attaching too much significance to this concept, this phenomenon, to call it social commentary?
Well, you know, that's actually something my publisher and various readers of the column came up with. I mean, I always just thought that I was making up words and that they were fun, but, you know, after you make up like 250 words, you do actually start to see patterns in what you're talking about. And, you know, because a lot of the words I made up are words people asked me to make up, you know, they do reflect these spaces in our culture that we really need to name. And so in that sense, it is, you know, the social commentary.
Well, right. If you look at this maybe 20 years from now or 50 years from now, I wonder if, you know, the effect is that that you've gotten a snapshot of the stuff that was on people's mind in 2015.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think in general, it's actually going to be really interesting to see what people are thinking in 50 years, because they have these vast, you know, digital archives that are essentially the result, you know, of our talking, because most people asked me, not in person, but on Twitter or Facebook or by email. So even where I found the things to comment on, you know, comes from a source. Otherwise, you know, if this had been like 30 years ago, it really would have been just my friends.
As you look at the 250 or so words that make up this book, was there a crying need for all of them, or do some of them just sort of go in the category of fun for you?
Let's see. Yes. I mean, there are certain words, you know, the words are organized, you know, from more general, you know, something like fidgetal, which, you know, is talking about, you know, how much we need to continually check our technology and be completely vigilant about it and can't pay attention to anything else. But then, you know, that goes on to something much more specific like twitticule, you know, which is to make fun of someone on Twitter. And so what I tried to do was, you know, I would have these vast overreaching words, you know, but someone, for instance, asked for the word for how you feel when you listen to an old Barbra Streisand song. And I thought about it for a few minutes and then I said sentimental. And so the, you know, and that obviously, that is a very fun word, but it didn't happen to make it into this particular book. But, you know, but I could do an entire book, you know, just on, you know, very small, you know, music things. And so I do think in that sense, it is something you need, because everybody has their own inside baseball. And part of the reason we do need new words is that every time you create a new thing, you create a new opportunity for inside baseball. So it's like it really depends on who you ask. This person needed sentimental.
Do you think, is English an inhibiting language, or does it really make a lot of this possible? I mean, I interviewed the author slash illustrator of a book not long ago of words that exist only in a different language. And I kind of wonder whether English lends itself to doing this or makes it harder.
Oh, English is a great language for this, because English is actually a low German language, which is, you know, and the Germans are the kings and queens of portmanteau. And, you know, but also we have the Romantic languages, you know, we have Latin, we have Yiddish, you know, we are such a, you know, hodgepodge of other languages that actually you can do quite a bit in our language. And what I'm always very interested in is, you know, what you can do. Like, I remember once, maybe about 10 years ago, I was in Naples, and there was a rapper that we met on the street named, and he called himself Clan Vesuvio. And he, which I love. I still remember that. I think that's like the best name. And he started rapping. And what's so funny about Italian is everything rhymes in Italian. It's like the easiest language to be a rapper in, Italian. And so, you know, every different language lends itself, I think, to its own kind of wordplay and its own forms. But I do think English is very, very mutable in this particular way, which is why it's easy to have fun in this language. I don't know how easy it is to have fun in, you know, Tagalog, but, you know, that. But I would love to see.
Did this all start with your New York Times column, or was it something you played around with in your head well before that?
Well, you know, I've always rhymed constantly. I'm almost a, you know, I used to do formal rhyming poetry, but I'm also just kind of a compulsive rhymer. And I make metaphors compulsively. And, you know, I'll generally think three words at once anyway, just because of the way I'm thinking. And so I think all of these combined into having a, you know, knack for this particular type of wordplay. But, you know, I don't know how good, it's always funny, it's like, you would think I would be really good at Scrabble, you know, you would think I would be, like, good at those scramble things on the subway, like the word scrambles. I am just totally a normal citizen when it comes to those, you know. And so what's funny is they really all do access a completely different part of the brain. You know, words, and that is actually one of the things I loved about doing this column, because it taught me that I actually look at words visually, because many of my words do work, you know, you can see what they are by hearing them, you know, something like dromineering, you can easily see both the words, easily hear both the words, but a lot of my words have a lot of internal spellings that also suggest other words. You know, something like brattle, which is to talk too much about your children, actually has a lot of words in it that you only really see if you're looking at the word. And, you know, it was something I didn't even know I did until I started doing the column. But I always like to call them, like, these are the world's shortest poems.
Do you have, I mean, hopes that any of these words will honestly, truly catch on?
It's a funny question. No, not really. You know, I didn't write them for that. I wrote them because they're fun to think about and fun to say. And I am always interested, though, in, like, you know, for instance, like a word like mansplaining, you know. That's a word we really needed, and it's a word that is fun to say, but it's not really wordplay. Like, there's nothing playful about it. You know, it's just sort of a new term that we all can understand, and that, you know, also lends itself to new things like manspreading, or, you know, but which really is a problem. But
less so in Milwaukee.
It's a huge problem in Jersey City and in New York. But I think sometimes the words that actually catch, you know, having a word that catches on, you know, something like spam. The hell does, you know, spam, what we get spam, have to do with actual spam? Nothing. But it's a really good word for that somehow. And so I think wordplay and words that catch on are also just totally different things, because a word that we think is funny as, you know, quote unquote social commentary is not exactly the same as a word that we need literally to say something. You know, what I think about these words is that they're not words people actually necessarily want to say. It's words for something that has been, you know, bugging someone or interesting someone. They're really just words for things we do all the time. So asking for a word is not really saying, I need a word for this thing I do all the time. It's just a way of saying, you know, I do this thing all the time. And when we see the word, we go, oh my God, like Uncle Rich is so domineering. But, you know, it's not necessarily the same purpose. And that's the other thing I loved about doing the column is it always made me think about what we really use neologisms for and, you know, the different categories of them and words we actually want to say and words that we think are funny because they describe something we do are totally different things.
Well, and I will point out, as I was trying to put together the questions for this interview, I thought, well, you know, how useful are these words? And then my wife accused me of shambulating the other day.
I do. It's funny. Shambulate. Shambulate was a word that took me so long. I wanted a word for that in my head so badly.
And you have to explain it now.
Oh, to shambulate is to fake jog across the street when the light changes. And it's something people do all the time, you know, because it's like they'll be in the middle of the street and the light changes and they're not going to go any faster, but they make this sort of like token effect, you know, effort at looking like they're running. And so, you know, that's a very good, you know, that's a very good example of something we need a word for, but not something we actually need a word for to say. But I love it that your wife actually used that word. That makes me very happy. I mean, the one word people do use is fidgetal. I think fidgetal is sort of catching on a little bit, but I don't know. I mean, as I said, it's to actually join the lexicon and to play with the lexicon are just two totally different things.
Well, as we have this conversation, you're about to head out on tour, at which point I imagine you will be inundated with everyone else's ideas for these words. Is this, you know, your blessing and your curse?
Well, people send me a couple of words a day, always, and they have since the column started. But what's terrible is that I cannot tell you the number of people that sent me hangry that were like, you know, and it's to be hungry and angry. And I would always write back and say, oh, it's the greatest word, so funny, you know. And then sometimes I would write back and say, you know, that's a word everyone made up. It's such a fun word, you know, and it's like a word we all share. But then people have said to me, did you ever think, you know, and then I'm like, I don't even understand hangry. And they're like, what do you mean you don't understand it? Don't you get angry when you're hungry? And I'm like, no, I just get really enervated. I start to sort of fall asleep. And then I eat 10 donuts. That's what I get. So, you know, clearly there are words all society needs that I don't need and vice versa.
Well, it is a terrific collection. And Lizzie Skernick, it's always a thrill to talk to you.
Oh, same here.
Lizzie Skernick is the author of That Should Be a Word, A Language Lover's Guide to Chorgasms, Povertunity, Brattling, and 250 Other Much-Needed Terms for the Modern World. She'll give a reading this Saturday at 3 at Boswell Book Company, and there is more information at WUWM.com.